Whale. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please don't make any calls unless we specifically ask for calls, because right now we have with us Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution, and we're going to be talking about what separates America from every other nation in the world. You know, down through the ages, men have always wanted to be free, but they never were. There was always an emperor, or a feudal lord, or a tribal chief, or a king, or a dictator, or someone to control their lives. And, of course, there were attempts at representative government in ancient Greece, but democracy always deteriorates into despotism. That's what Plato wrote in the Republic 2,350 years ago. And then, of course, Rome, well, Rome was an example of what happens when government is centralized, and that you soon have, instead of a representative government, you have a Caesar. And so down through the ages, why there have always been trials, that how could we establish a government where men could be free? They established many of the precepts of limited government, restricting the power of the government in England following the signing of the Magna Carta in 1215. But England never had a fixed constitution like we had. They had the Bill of Rights and the Petition of Rights and various things and various ideas that gave Englishmen freedom. But never before in all history was there ever a document that limited the power of the government and left people to be free. It delegated a responsibility to the states and to the local communities. And the whole idea was that if you had a moral people, you could limit the power of the central authority. If you didn't have moral people, of course, our system of government would work for no other. And that is why there's been a conscious, organized effort for over 50 years to undermine the morality of our country, because an immoral people need a tyrant, or as William Penn had said, those will not be ruled by God, will be ruled by tyrants. And that's exactly what is happening in America today as we move away from our Constitution towards the all-powerful state. Everything in Washington, D.C., all power there, tremendous amounts of money to buy the support of the people, an ever larger army, even a standing army, of course, moving into communities right here in the United States, collecting weapons from the people. Could it happen? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it could, because we've forgotten the message of the Constitution, and that's why Pastor David Whitney is with us tonight. David, thank you so very much for being with us.
It's a blessing and a pleasure to be on your show, Dr. Stan. I know that the work you're doing in spreading the message all over our land is vital, because people have, as you said, forgotten the foundation here. They've forgotten that, you know, as one historian accurately stated, America is the only nation ever invented that was based upon a creed, that is a religious belief system. And that is very simple. Creed, it's contained in the Declaration, three essential points. There is a creator God, which is a shocking idea to people who believe in evolution, but our founders knew there's a creator God. The Bible says so, and they believed it. Secondly, that creator God has given to us as human beings, made in his image, he's given to us rights. Our rights come from God, not from government. And thirdly, the sole purpose of government is to secure and protect those God-given rights. That's why they formed these United States of America.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. Well, David, you pick up the story from there.
You know, 2 weeks ago I had an interesting experience debating at a college, a local college here, a history professor and a representative from the Americans United for Separation of Church and State. They're not Americans, they're atheists and God-haters. But anyway, we're talking about the issue of the religious founding of our country, which they were both denying. They were saying, no, our founders were deists and they were secular humanists, basically, which is a complete lie. Because they said very clearly in the Declaration, there is a God, a creator God, and all of our rights come from Him, not from government. And if they come from government, then your rights are never secure, but because they come from God, they're absolutely unalienable. They cannot be taken away. A government may violate them, which is what they outlined in the Declaration, that King George III was violating their God-given rights. And when you ask most people, why did our founders separate from Great Britain? What was their objection? The one thing that comes back repeatedly, because this propaganda machine has pounded it into people's heads in the school systems and in shows and discussions and books and so on, it is this. They say, oh, it was taxation without representation. Now, if you look at their list of 28, there's 28 reasons the colonists gave for why they were separating from England, 28 reasons all related to our God-given rights. Taxation without representation was only one of them.
And, of course, that's it. Those are listed in the Declaration of Independence, which used to be taught regularly in our schools and read every 4th of July, and most people couldn't give you five of the reasons today why we separated from Great Britain, because most of those things are taking place today.
And it's interesting to look at that list because it's very informative, as you say. Those same things that our founders were saying were tyranny, were a violation of our God-given rights, they are being done by our government today. Taxation without representation, just one. Another list they gave was immigration issues, that the king was preventing people who wanted to immigrate that they believed would be helpful to the colonies. He was preventing them from immigrating. He was also inciting insurrection against them. That is, he was funding terrorists, you could say. Terrorists in their day were the Indians, who were being fed ample supplies of guns as well as support to attack the colonists on the western frontier of the colonies of that day. And so they listed his transporting of large numbers of troops, keeping a standing army in the country. And it's interesting, our founders were so leery of a standing army, they made it very specific in the Constitution. No standing army would exist.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment. We'll bring our stations on. Well, Dr. Stan, I guess Pastor David Whitney, and Pastor Whitney was just saying that the founding fathers of America feared a standing army because they knew, oh, if the government ever had a standing army, it would use it for all sorts of mischief. And boy, what mischief we had today. In fact, they did everything they could to avoid a standing army, because that's what they had in Europe. And when you have a standing army, why? You're going to have wars. Limit the power of government, limit the army, limit the navy. You know, we do not need this to protect ourselves. This is being used today. Our military is not being used to protect America. We have troops stationed in 130 nations throughout the world. Do you really think they're defending America? No, we're building an empire, because that's the real purpose behind what's going on today. And the American people better wake up and find out what's happening, because every great empire throughout all history has eventually been crushed. Pick up the story there, David, please.
And some of the other objections they had related to three primary larger causes. In other words, if you were to break all 28 down, you'd find there's a few single causes, like we've petitioned him repeatedly for a redress of these grievances. He's not responded to it. That's a single one. Taxation without representation, a single one. Immigration, a single one. Cutting them off from trade with other countries, forcing them only to trade with Great Britain. So there's about four or five that were just solo issues. But the three major categories of that 28 reasons was his abuse of the legislature. That is, he abolished colonial legislatures. He refused to assent to laws that were good. He did all sorts of things in the legislative powers of government to abuse that legislature against the colonists. The second area of his abuse was in the military. Standing armies, we mentioned. He gave the military a special right to have trials that really were unjust, kind of kangaroo courts, so that basically there would be no justice for any soldier who committed a crime in the colonies. Soldiers were exempt, basically, from the law. They could do whatever and get away with it.
Sort of like what over in Iraq today, they've insisted that no American can be tried by an Iraqi court, the same way that no British troop can be tried by an Iraqi court. So the occupying forces, both American and English, are above the laws of the land that they are occupying today.
And when the soldiers know that, they know they can get away with all kinds of things, including the abuse and torture of prisoners and so on, as we see in Iraq. And it's a dangerous thing, and it's also, as you mentioned, it's one of the hallmarks of an empire. An empire sees itself as all-powerful, and there's no checks upon the limit of the power that the king has invested himself with, basically. And that's what they were arguing in the Declaration. They said, we're not creating a revolution. We're returning to the ancient rights of Englishmen, codified by Magna Carta and many other subsequent pieces of legislation. They're saying, we're not creating anything new. It's the king, King George III, who has violated the basic God-given rights that we have that are part of English common law. So his abuse of the military, his abuse of the legislature, but even a greater abuse that disturbed them was his abuse of the judiciary in their land. He refused in many cases to allow a trial by jury of peers, which is an ancient right of all Englishmen going back to Magna Carta, secured by Magna Carta, that if you're going to be tried, true justice will take place in the courtroom if a trial of your peers serve as the jury and the jury judges the law, is the law just, as well as the facts. And that jury ultimately really is the judge in the courtroom. It determines a whole lot, including in that day, determining a sentence. Well, that's a very powerful role, and King George did not like that powerful role because many of the abusive things like the Stamp Act and so forth, when he tried to have the colonists put on trial in the colonies, a jury of the peers agreed that the law was unjust. You know, the Stamp Act, they said, this is an unjust law. It's against the laws of nature. Nature's God. It violates basic God-given rights. Therefore, it doesn't matter the facts in this case, because we judge the law, first of all, and this man or woman is not guilty of having violated this law, because this law itself is wicked law. It's against God's law. So again and again, things were being overturned in the courtroom, and the king was very upset at this, and he knew he just couldn't eliminate trial by jury of one's peers, because that was established very clearly in English common law. So he just created a different court system and began to try the colonists in a different court system, including, as one of their objections says, hauling them across the ocean to be tried in Great Britain, not to be tried in the colonies. And this is a very significant thing, because a colonist taken to Great Britain is not being tried by a jury of his peers. Here's people who are maybe unfavorable already just by the fact that they don't know these people. These people are not of their neighborhood or vicinity. And the ancient right of Englishmen of a trial by jury is of one's peers, of one's community. That is, it's people who know your character, people who know the situation, people who are familiar with what's taking place on the ground. That's a fair and just trial, because those people then have an understanding of what it's like to be in your shoes, where hauling you across the ocean certainly doesn't do that. So if you look at the three big categories, if you were to summarize, you'd say, we separated from Great Britain for three primary causes. His abuse of his legislative powers, his abuse of the military powers, and his abuse of the judiciary. And if you think about that, that's the three branches of government: the legislature, the executive that oversees the military, and the judiciary. And as you mentioned earlier today, we see those same exact abuses in our day. The legislature, as many of us know, is completely unresponsive, especially the Senate, to the people who supposedly they're accountable to. And the Congress is continuing to break its oath of office in passing unconstitutional legislation. And the way they get away with it, of course, is most Americans don't know the Constitution. They don't know the contract that we have entered into in creating this form of government. So they don't know when it's being violated, and therefore they don't know how or when to hold their elected officials accountable and throw the bums out when the bums break the oath that they took before Almighty God to uphold this Constitution.
And of course, what's incredible with McCain-Feingold bill, they've made it illegal for any political organization or committee to inform the electorate within 60 days of an election how their congressman or senator has voted. They don't want the American people to know how their elected representatives are voting, and so sending out, you know, records of how these people have voted immediately before the election that now has been deemed unconstitutional. Thanks, of course, to the Supreme Court, and thanks to the President who said, oh, I signed the bill because I knew it wasn't constitutional. Oh, shucks, they went ahead and declared it was constitutional. I never would have signed it if I thought they were going to find it constitutional. Talk about hypocrisy. Yes. Gives hypocrisy a bad name.
We have three branches of government that have actually melded into one rather than as they were designed to be checks and balances on each other. In a sense, they're all in cahoots with each other. You know, the legislature passes unconstitutional legislation, the president signs that unconstitutional legislation, and then the court says, oh, it's constitutional. So we've got three out-of-control, tyrannical branches of government, even as they did in their day, had the legislative and executive and judiciary, and they accused them very specifically in no uncertain terms in the Declaration of Independence. So I'd encourage all of the listeners, next time you hear somebody say that the cause for the War for Independence and our separation from Great Britain was taxation without representation, ask them when they last or if they've ever read the Declaration to see what was really stated. Yes, that's in there, but it's only one, a very small sliver. If you were to break a pie chart out and show you've got two major categories and the judiciary was another major category, and then a small sliver of a number of other issues, one of which was taxation without representation. And in our day, we need to understand the Declaration very clearly, because what it says is that when your form of government violates your God-given rights, those rights endowed by your Creator, then you have another God-given right, and that is to abolish or change that form of government. Because they state very clearly that government derives its just powers from the consent of the governed. That is, if we don't give our consent to the form of government, that government becomes illegitimate. And they were saying, we have a legitimate right to separate from Great Britain and declare the king, as they do at the end of the Declaration, unfit to be the ruler of a free people because he's violated our God-given rights. And we have the right, given by God, to establish a just form of government, laying the foundations of that in what is just, the laws of nature and nature's God. And again, this is I think for most Americans today is not a very clear idea that our government was designed to be a government by consent of the governed. Now, I look at a lot of the stuff coming out of Washington, D.C., and it's not by my consent. The IRS, it's not by my consent. I mean, you can list a whole string of government agencies, EPA, OSHA, they're not by my consent, and I speak with my, or communicate with my congressman and my senator, but they're wholly unresponsive to what I say. As a matter of fact, 99% of the time, they disagree with me point blank as to the position that I'm taking, because it's a constitutional position.
And I think we have in Washington, D.C. today, the finest congressmen than money could buy.
Uh-huh.
And their votes are purchased by the lobbyists, their votes are purchased by the great corporations who contribute to them, on the most part. And this is not representation, you know, of the people, it is representation of the power elite. When President Bush wanted to get through the CAFTA legislation, which was, of course, to forego our sovereignty and begin creating this Central American Free Trade Zone, and, of course, then put the trade issues before international boards not answerable to our Congress, he put out $50 billion in bribes. If anybody wants to see the articles, we'll get them for you. $50 billion in bribes to about 35 congressmen, you know, promising special things for their districts if they would simply vote against the will of their constituents. And this is how the game is really played. It's time we had representatives who represent us, who believe in our Constitution, and who fear God. Well, David, why don't you pick up the story from there?
And so if we understand that government may be altered or abolished when it violates these three principles, and we see in our day that government, which was instituted to secure our God-given rights, is not doing that job, even in the most basic right, right to life. We've talked about Terri Schiavo as an example of that, where all the government fell down and bowed down to this one black-robed lawyer in Florida, who's only a probate lawyer, you know, lowly probate lawyer. Oh, he's the rule of law. Whatever he says, kill this woman. Well, he's the rule of law. We can't defend this woman's life. And we did everything we could because, you know, we just can't go against any law, whatever comes out of a black-robed lawyer, that's law. And that's what they basically were saying. And most Americans have shifted their head and said, oh, yeah, I guess that's right, you know. Got to kill anybody that the black-robed lawyer says we got to kill. Very, very dangerous doctrine, because that's exactly where Nazi Germany started. Matter of fact, when you study the Nuremberg trials and what took place there, their defense was, repeatedly, we did what was legal. That is, the laws of Germany told us to do this. We kill these Jews and we put these people in concentration camps and gas ovens, and everything we did was legal. Well, wait a minute. Our founders said very clearly in the Declaration, no. There is an absolute sovereign standard of the Almighty God, the laws of nature and nature's God, and every human being, every human government is answerable to that standard. It's God's law. And if you violate God's law, you can call it legal all you want, but it is not legal. And our government today is not defending the right to life, as 40-plus million unborn babies can testify to, as they've had their lives sniffed out in their snuffed out in their mother's womb. So here we have a government not protecting our right to life, not protecting our right to liberty, as the Patriot Act is abundant evidence that they're not protecting our right to liberty, and then the right to pursuit of happiness, which of course includes the right to own property.
And I think I'd like to just comment. The president recently has said that, we are going to have to change the entire structure of our government in case there are more national emergencies, and we want the military, the American military, to become more involved and to take over the management of these emergencies, because obviously the local communities can't. Now, many people in the military are very disturbed by this. They said this is not the function of the military. We'd have to completely retrain the military for police action. We're a fighting organization, not an administrative organization. But the president, over the opposition of many people within the military, is demanding that now, of course, we will have the military begin moving in whenever there's a major catastrophe, whether they're asked to move in or not. I mean, certainly the governor of the state of Louisiana had the right to ask the military to come in. But what happens if they don't ask the military to come in? He wants the ability to move in right away over the objections of his own military advisors, who obviously know the Constitution far better than the president does.
Which is, again, why our founders were so leery of a standing army, because they knew a standing army could be used against the populace, not just some enemy, foreign or domestic, but against the people themselves, which is why the Second Amendment, as George Washington said, is the eyepiece of liberty, absolutely essential for liberty, because they knew from experience that an out-of-control government, it will try to take your guns. I don't know if you know the story down in Williamsburg when they did that. They took the powder and the muskets and they put them on a ship, and Patrick Henry rounded up a group of brave and loyal men from the hills.
Well, hold that off right there. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Pastor David Whitney, and we're simply talking about the fact that our government is violating the laws of our Constitution. I commented during the break that the President of the United States has recently said, we've got to expand the military power if there's another emergency. The military has got to be able to move in much more quickly. I mean, look how terribly things were handled in New Orleans. That's why we've got to get the American military in sooner, whenever there's an emergency. And people in the military are saying, but this is not our function. But the president doesn't really care what anybody says. He wants our military there, complete with their automatic weapons and the ability to disarm this population and seize power of everything. Why, where does he get off that? When the governor asks for the military, American military help, there is justification. But he's not talking about when the governor asks for it. He's calling for the military to be able to move in immediately in case of any emergency, and I think that's frightening. And David was talking about certainly our past history and the fact that one of the reasons for the American Revolution was when the English wanted to seize the weapons from the colonists, because all tyrants want to disarm the people. And, of course, that's exactly what they want to do in America. When you take the guns away from the people, why that leaves only the dishonest people with guns? Why don't they disarm all the criminals first, insist that they turn in their weapons, and then it would be safe for the law-abiding citizens to do it? But they know the criminals aren't going to obey the law, so they want to take them away from the law-abiding citizen and leave them helpless in the face of the criminals? What madness is that? And yet, that's what they tried to do in New Orleans.
And when they did that in the colonial era, great patriot Patrick Henry gathered a group of militiamen from the hills of Virginia, and they descended on Williamsburg, and they basically held the town hostage and held the governor there and said, "You return the muskets, you return the gunpowder that you've taken from the magazine here, or else." And the governor backed down, and the crisis passed, and the people recognized that they needed this, and actually that was one of the reasons Patrick Henry insisted that there must be a Bill of Rights that secures the citizens' right to keep and bear arms. Unless that's there, the Constitution as it was formed is not a safe document, is what he was saying, because he was initially very much opposed to the signing of the Constitution, because he didn't want to see a form of government brought into being without protections for religion, Christianity, and the First Amendment, and the Second Amendment, the right to arms, because he knew that tyrannical governments are the reason why we must have the Second Amendment. You know, often today what we hear is people talking about, hunting and sportsmanship and, you know, shooting competitions is the reason for the Second Amendment. No, it's not. It's to protect us from a tyrannical government, because they experienced exactly that. They needed their muskets because they knew those redcoats had no interest in their freedom, no interest in true liberty, and they were going to have to stand toe-to-toe with them, musket to musket, and actually create smoke and draw blood before the issue was settled, as the history of the War for Independence certainly proved. And so they have said that the people should abolish their government only after a long train of abuses and usurpations, and they detail that that is what the colonists experienced year after year, decade after decade of abuses, and it led to a point where they had to say, enough, because we know what the government is doing, what King George is up to. He is designing and working towards a complete tyranny over every colonist, and that we cannot allow that to happen. And so they said that we must therefore acquiesce in a necessity. So they said this is a necessity. This is not something that we would choose. It's been forced upon us. The necessity which denounces our separation and hold them as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. And we need to understand that in a sense we're approaching a similar point. I would never call for people to take up arms. We have a long way to go before that. But we're approaching an issue where the design, and we know this from, as you've done excellent research on this, the New World Order, what they're about, what they're up to, is absolute tyrannical dictatorial control.
And there is a group of men in America, and they work within the Council on Foreign Relations. In fact, recently James Wolfensohn, addressing the Council on Foreign Relations at the 90th anniversary of birthday of David Rockefeller, talked about, where would the world be if we didn't have the people here running the world? Somebody's got to run the world, and we're running the world. But you see, the American people aren't to know that. There is a ruling elect. They control both political parties. They control the entire media. They control the tax-exempt foundations. Six of the last 12 presidents have come from the Council on Foreign Relations, or very closely related to it. And, of course, the key positions in our government today, always held by people from the CFR, just exactly as the Secretary of State always comes from the CFR. Mm. Well, this is Dr. Sten. Go ahead, pick up the story there, David.
And so as they signed the Declaration of Independence and basically abolished the form of government, they took a very bold step in doing so, something, again, that was unlike the formation of any other country, because they were forming this country on a creed, the creed of the Bible, the creed of Christianity, the understanding, the biblical understanding of law and justice. And see, that's where we have fallen short as a pastor. Part of the reason I've gotten involved in this whole movement is because I recognize that the pulpits in America have been woefully silent on the justice of God, the law of God as it relates to government. And when we talk about the colonial era leading up to the war for independence, it was from the pulpits that righteousness and justice flamed forth. And it was the pulpits that were clearly, loudly condemning and criticizing King George III because he was violating the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. And the pulpits today are silent because their silence actually has been bought through IRS favors such as the 501c3 and so on. And the result is that the pulpits in America, which should be sounding the warning and sounding the alarm and teaching the Christians of America that God's law is being violated here, and as Christians we're called to stand just as our founders did. That's been silent. And so the organization Institute on the Constitution has been raised up to accomplish this purpose, to teach Americans really what's an American view of law and government, which is the biblical view, and teach people the history and heritage of our land, and prepare people to take their role in restoring the republic. See, I would not call people to arms because it is still possible to restore our republic. We have on paper that the supreme law of the land is still the Constitution.
It hasn't been repealed yet. If anybody wants to amend it, it can be amended. But it cannot be changed by judges who have a political agenda. And this is the great tragedy of what's going on today. We have judges, and I fear very much that Judge Roberts will not in any way change the direction that the court has taken, contrary to what most conservative and Christian leaders are saying. We have judges who have changed the structure of our society, but it's all been done illegally. The legal document, the Constitution, still is the law of our land, and it's about time people begin to read it and begin to study it and begin to understand that the purpose of the Constitution was to limit the power of the federal government. And the Bill of Rights is still intact. It has never been repealed. And it doesn't matter what four or five black robe judges say, why, the Bill of Rights still protects the rights of the individual and limits the power of what the federal government can do. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Pastor David Whitney. Well, this is Dr. Stan. And David, before we go on, could you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with the Institute of the Constitution, learn more about your organization, and perhaps even set up a local institute in their community to begin to revitalize interest in the founding documents of this country? Because if the American people don't understand our form of government, then there is no way it will ever be retained.
That's right. And we put together what we call a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with really any group of people to teach these principles. Actually, we say you're hosting it because Dr. John Eismo conducts the half-hour lectures that walk through the history of that led up to the founding era and then walks through each of the founding documents, the Declaration, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, to give you a working knowledge of each of these so that you can fulfill your function in evaluating what's going on in our land and evaluating whether a senator or a congressman is acting constitutionally and evaluating those who want to be elevated to those positions of great power in our land to determine, are these people really going to abide by their oath, or are they going to violate the oath under they're promising? As you know, you look at the last year's presidential election, both large party candidates were promising us in their campaign speeches day after day after day, they both promised us they were going to violate their oath of office before they even were in office. Well, the president was already in office, but his contender was not. They were saying, we're going to violate it by promising you this program and that program and the other program. And, you know, Americans are deceived in thinking that when a government promises to violate its oath that it takes, that you can trust that government at all. You're deceived to think that, because if they're promising you they're going to break their promise, Well, all she could say is there's no honor among thieves, and they're going to do whatever they can get away with, as evil as they want to be, because they've already done it publicly. And if Americans don't know the Constitution and don't know the Declaration, which, by the way, the Declaration is the organic law of the United States. It is part of the legal structure, the legal system. And when I was debating these atheists and God-haters 2 weeks ago, they were trying to say, no, it was a secular, deistic and all this. But no. The Declaration proves that you're wrong, because it is still the organic law of the United States. It's been declared to be so. It's in the beginning of the code. If you were to open the code book of the laws of the United States, it's right there in law, that we are founded upon the laws of nature and nature's God, which is God's word, and the conscience and reason that God has given human beings to understand his law.
Now, is that, that phrase, or is the Declaration a part of the this document you're speaking of?
Oh, the Declaration is actually part of the U.S. Code. If you were to open the volume of books, that's all the laws of the United States, right in the beginning there, the Declaration is actually part of the code.
Now, what did the atheists and the people from the American Way have to say about that?
Oh, they said between the Declaration in 1776 and the signing the Constitution in 1787, there was an enormous change, you know, and these people were religious. Yeah, they were religious back there in 1776, but by the time they got to 1787, they were not. And I proved them wrong in a number of ways, by quotations of, you know, Ben Franklin there in the Constitution Convention and others, that they were wrong, but they continued to assert, no, all that, you're misinterpreting what Franklin... I mean, they just refused to look at the facts that are right place in front of their eyes.
Well, I'm sure you brought up the end of the Constitution, where
yes,
they say, and this is signed in the day of our Lord, you know, in the specific day of our Lord. What was the response to that?
The response was, well, that doesn't matter, because they were not referring to anything other than a vague reference to Jesus Christ. That was not saying that we are a Christian nation. I referred to Holy Trinity. The
Church, case of the Church of the Holy Trinity versus
Trinity,
the United States, right.
92, where it says, we are a Christian nation. And they didn't have an answer to that. They just kind of ran off in different directions, trying to ignore what was obvious fact. Actually, there's another case that I didn't cite, as late as the 1950s, where the Supreme Court also said this is a Christian nation founded on the Christian religion. And, you know, these people are so, well, actually, they're evil, because they may know the truth. The historian there, the professor, he may know the truth, but he's going to lie to all his students, because he wants to deceive them into following the New World Order lie.
But you see, David, there is this conspiracy against God.
Mm-hmm.
There is an effort to destroy any realization or recognition of the fact that America was founded by Christians on Christian principles. You didn't have to be a Christian to live here. This was never a requirement, but the basis of our law, the basis of our tradition, and the beliefs of the founding fathers, with the exception of perhaps two, was based in Christianity, and Franklin and Jefferson, although probably neither truly traditional Christians, believed in the precepts, even though they may have not believed in the divinity of Jesus Christ. In fact, Benjamin Franklin had said, you know, Christianity is the greatest religion of all time if people would only adhere to it, and of course, as Jefferson grew older and older, why he professed increasingly, you know, his reliance upon the promise of Jesus Christ. Maybe he didn't believe in his supernatural, but he certainly believed in his teachings. But be that as it may, all the rest of our founding fathers, with very, very few exceptions, were dedicated evangelical Christians. And, you know, it doesn't matter how big a lie is. If you tell it often enough, people will eventually believe that all of our founding fathers were deists, and there is no evidence we were a Christian nation, and that it is just blatantly untrue. If you go back and you read the writings of Madison and Adams and all of the others, they all recognize that that Christianity, the beliefs of the Bible, Blackstone's commentary on the laws of the land, was the very foundation of the laws of America, the Bible.
And that's why the Institute on the Constitution has this host kit put together, so that you can communicate that easily to people in your neighborhood or family and friends, and especially in churches. As I said earlier, the dearth of this truth being taught from the pulpit has got to be changed, and churches is where this ought to be. In every Bible-believing church across the country, this course ought to be offered, and anyone can do this, Dr. Stan. That's the exciting thing. It doesn't take somebody as a historian, or actually it's better if they haven't have been lied to with the history profession or the legal profession. Just the average citizen can put this on by showing the videos and walking through the materials that we've designed, a student notebook and a host notebook that tells the host in detailed instructions how to conduct a class. People can get a hold of our host kit by calling us toll-free at 866-730-9796. Let me repeat that number. Our toll-free number is 866-730-9796. Or they can actually go to our website and order it online. It's iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com. One of the things we offer folks is a free subscription, if they'd like, to our Liberty Forum magazine that comes out quarterly, where we have lengthy articles dealing with various issues, and the one that is currently being prepared for publication deals with the National Constitution Center up there in Philadelphia. Just the other side of the grass from the Independence Hall is a institution. It's designed as a museum that lies repeatedly. It tells one lie after another lie about our founders and about the purpose of the Constitution. It's just amazing to anyway, we solidly critique what those lies are that the National Constitution Center is feeding to millions of Americans, and particularly, sad to say, school children are probably the predominant ones coming through that museum, receiving the lie, having it pounded into their head once again and again. And so we've got to go around the museums, around the major media that is lying about our founding and the establishment of our country, and this is the means of doing it, a grassroots movement. Just the average citizen, gathering a group of people. Speaking with someone this week who is doing it in Raleigh, North Carolina, and they've done three classes, and they're starting the next one, and that's very exciting because all over America, people out in Utah, this is catching fire out there, and all over America, people are taking this host kit, and people who are simply care enough to say, we need to do something to stop the tyranny of the government. That tyranny, actually, Dr. Stan, as I analyze the causes that led to our separation, the tyranny that we are currently suffering under in some ways is worse than King George III ever dreamed of being. I mean, King George III never dreamed of murdering innocent women by judicial fiat as Terry Schiavo was, or he never dreamed of things like the Patriot Act where he'd be breaking into people's homes without a warrant. And things that are taking place today, people should be extremely upset about.
And doing away with the right of habeas corpus on the case of Padilla. It doesn't matter what you think of Padilla. Mm. I mean, the thing is that he has a right as an American citizen to a trial, and they're not going to give it to him.
Right.
Of course, the major reason is because his crime was committed before 9-1-1. How did we know what he was doing before 9-1-1? Because we had our agents over there in that camp, and we can't let the American people know that we were carefully monitoring the entire world Islamic terrorist movement for 9-1-1. That's why Padilla can't be allowed to come to court. They can't be put on trial because they can't allow the truth to come out to the American people. That's why he's there. But if they can take away his right of habeas corpus, then no man's life or family are safe. And where is the outcry that a Christian administration would be doing this? That a Christian administration would be allowing euthanasia? That a Christian administration would not have done anything to stop a partial birth abortion or a regular abortion? I mean, certainly the Christian administration could have demanded that when they passed the partial birth abortion law, that they put a rider on that said the courts could not intervene. It was a very, very simple thing to do. They had the votes, but they didn't do that. It's all perception. It's all show. It is all rhetoric over reality, symbolism over substance. The American people say, oh, yes, the Republicans are pro-life, but how many lives of unborn children have been saved since the Republicans came to power here in the United States?
Not one.
And, of course, internationally, why they took $36 million away from one pro-abortion UN agency and they gave it to another pro-abortion UN agency, but all everybody remembers is they took it away from the one pro-abortion UN agency, never mentioned what happened to the money. Isn't that interesting?
Well, as they concluded what they were stating in the declaration, they very clearly said that we are depending upon the supreme judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions. That is what we're doing. We are being judged by Almighty God and we're appealing to him as the supreme judge of the world, and we do in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies solemnly publish and declare that these colonies are and ought to be free and independent states. And then further, as they close, they say, with reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, fortunes, and our sacred honor. So these men were saying this entire exercise that we're engaged in declaring independence is with God's approval, the God of the Bible, and we are depending on His strength to get us through what we know is going to be disastrous, and it was for the signers of the Declaration. Some lost their lives, many lost their homes and their fortunes, and it was a very great sacrifice that these signers laid down in order to declare independence. And it's going to take some sacrifice on the part of true patriot Americans to restore the Constitutional Republic. And, you know, people are so distracted with many, many things that are going on. And the result is that, and that distraction perhaps is on purpose on the part of the New World Order folks, but if people were just to say, I've got to do something to secure not only my rights, my God-given rights, but I ought to be concerned about my neighbor's God-given rights, and I ought to be concerned about my children's God, and how about my grandchildren's God-given rights? You know, I ought to be concerned for those around me and the future posterity and their God-given rights enough to do one thing, and a simple thing, and that's what anyone can do, is host an institute on the Constitution. It does take time, it does take some preparation, it does take some sacrifice, but it's a small price to pay. If we can restore our constitutional republic, if we can regain the rights that are being stripped away from us by this current regime.
But I must point out that basically these are videos, so you don't have to do the videos. There's a question and answer book where they give you all the answers
That's
to the
right.
questions. They give you the questions to ask, then the answers to the questions. So, you know, there's not a great deal of time that has to be put in, because you and Michael Perutka and the others there at the Institute have really done all the work for them. It's just a matter of sitting down and applying the information that is there. And these 12 easy lectures, and they can be given, you know, over a weekend, or they can be given certainly, you know, in 12 half-hour sessions. And aren't you adding some additional material to the kit?
Yes, we have additional materials to help people understand some of the issues, like we've included in the student manual a copy of Bastiat's excellent little book, The Law. He talks about legal plunder, and it's an eye-opener to read what he, and this is back in the mid-19th century, what he was writing was right on target and sharp as a tack. We're also developing a course right now on the duty of the jury, and Lord willing, will be available in 2006 to help people train themselves and prepare themselves to really function as our founders designed the jury to function. But, you know, many people have believed the lie that the Constitution is too complicated and convoluted, difficult to understand. You got to be a constitutional lawyer and devote your whole life to studying this thing, or you're not going to understand it. That is a lie. We have homeschool students that are in fifth grade and sixth grade taking this course as part of their training, and they understand the concepts. Our founders didn't make such a convoluted and difficult to understand document. They made a document that was designed for every citizen to understand. And I think that's part of the success the New World Order folks have had. They've convinced most Americans that the Constitution is far too difficult and complicated for anybody to understand, except the experts. So let's just hire the experts and trust the experts to do their job, you know, on the Supreme Court or what have you, and the rest of us sit back and just let them go. No way. Our founders wanted everyone to know the Constitution, and everyone as a citizen to hold their elected officials accountable and throw them out of office when they violate the Constitution. Call them to task, call them on the carpet on issues, and not allow unconstitutional legislation go unchecked, and we've allowed that to happen for more than 50 years. Most people don't know the details of the Constitution. They weren't taught that in public school, and therefore they have not functioned as we're designed to function. You see, our system of government is not designed to work on autopilot. It's designed for patriot citizens who understand and are eager to take action, and who are, actually, we've told people, you know, oftentimes you may find that there is no constitutional candidate you can vote for. We encourage you to run. We encourage you to challenge them by running for office yourself.
Now, we're getting to the end of the program. I want you to get your website and your telephone number out just one more time, David.
Yes, our website is iotconline.com, one word, iotconline.com. Our toll-free number is 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796.
And, of course, the Institute of the Constitution does help Radio Liberty bring in these programs. We think it's so vitally important that you understand what's really going on. You understand the foundations of our freedom. We are a unique nation, unique throughout all time. Originally, I believe, founded with God's blessing. But I really fear that if we continue our current course, that God will withdraw the blessing from this nation. In fact, as we look around, is he already withdrawing his blessing? We'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, David, we got 3 minutes for you to wrap up tonight's program.
Our founders believed God's Word, the Bible, is the truth and the foundation of all truth. And actually, if you go and visit Philadelphia, not that institution down the end there that's purporting lies, and look at the Liberty Bell, right there inscribed on the Liberty Bell is a quotation from the book of Leviticus, chapter 25, verse 10. Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. They saw that what they were doing was in complete concord with God's law and God's Word. And this is where Christians need to rise up. They need to study all of the Bible, not just the selected parts they like, but they need to study all of God's Word and discover that God has a plan in terms of human government. It was clearly revealed in the Hebrew Republic, which was, if you study very carefully, a representative. When a king was brought to power, he was elected to that position. People affirmed him, King David being an example. And many of the details that we have in our form of government come directly out of God's Word, like Isaiah 33, verse 22, the three branches of government. God is a lawgiver. God is a judge. What am I missing here? God is the king, the executive branch. So even in the very structure of the three branches, it comes directly out of God's Word.
And I think that one of the most important things in the Bible is that phrase, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty.
Liberty.
There is, if the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Our liberty comes from God. It doesn't come from government. Unlike any other nation in all recorded history, in our founding document, the Declaration, it said that it was the Creator who gave us life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, not the government. This was not an inherent right we had. It was the right that came from the Creator. So this is why, of course, they don't want to mention God, because if they destroy the belief in God in this country, if we are a Christian nation, then, of course, we'll have to turn to government, to the tyrants, for our leadership. So give your parting thought there, David. We've got about just 30 seconds left.
The Creator has given us rights, and unless we stand up for those rights that he has given to us and declare them and assert that we have them, we will lose them. You can trust that autopilot does not work for government. It takes active citizens, and so we encourage people to take their place on the wall and get a host kit and begin teaching your community these truths.
And all that's necessary for evil to triumph is the good people to nothing, and the price that good people pay for their apathy and indifference to public affairs is that they are ruled by evil men. Ladies and gentlemen, look around you today. And notice, certainly, we're involved in war, we're involved in torturing, and where is the outcry from our leaders? God bless you, David. Thanks for so much being with us.
Thank you, Dr.
Good night. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and this is the time when I really need to remind you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs who believe, as I do, that the battle is not political. The battle is not ideological. It's not cultural. It is a spiritual battle that's being played out on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. There really are evil men in the world. There is a spiritual dimension to everything that's going on today. And that many of the people who are working not only in the music industry and in the educational industry, but working in government, are certainly have given themselves over to the dark side. Their dedication is to a world fascist society, And I believe that they are laying the foundation for the rule of the Antichrist. This is not imaginary. It's really very real. Today, if you read the Wall Street Journal, as I do regularly, you'll find out that we are lending all sorts of money. Our corporations are lending money to China. We're buying their bonds. We're doing everything we can to build up communist China, just as we build up Nazi Germany before the Second World War. So we're building up the best enemy money could buy in China in preparation for World War III. We're doing the same thing in Russia today. And American corporations and banks are going in and financing what is still a communist country. Oh, they say communism is dead. Everybody knows that. And yet 1.3 billion people live under communism in China today. And North Korea is a communist state. Vietnam is a communist state. Cuba is a communist state. Yes, the Congo is ruled by a communist. Angola is controlled by the communists. Southwest Africa is controlled by the communists. Zimbabwe is controlled by Mugabe, a communist we brought in power. And communism is alive and well throughout the world today. And the communists certainly are working very closely with Al-Qaeda and the terrorists, but you're not hearing about that. So much of what's going on, you're never going to hear about. This is why we encourage you to go to my website at RadioLiberty.com, www.RadioLiberty.com, and pull down our newsletters and read them, and study them and challenge them. And if you want the documentation for anything we say, give us a call. We'll be glad to provide it for you. And then, of course, we want to remind our listeners that we hope that many of you will consider seriously coming to our conference, an all-day conference on the 19th of November. That's the 19th of November, a Saturday right here in the Monterey Bay area. Beautiful area to come to this time of year. And so if you'd like to come, you're going to have to call. We're going to be serving lunch. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We're bringing in outside speakers, and believe me, it's going to be a great program. And then, of course, we also hope that many of you will tell others about our program and encourage them to listen, to challenge. We don't expect people to believe what we say initially, but as you begin studying, as you begin to understand, if you go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, that's RadioLiberty.com, you can listen to our programs live, directly or indirectly, 5 hours a day. You can listen to the archive radio programs. If you have our permission to copy anything we have produced, be it audio tapes or videos, anything we produce, you're welcome to copy. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And we'll be, until next time, may the Lord be with you. Remember, no man escapes when freedom fails. The best men rot in filthy jails. And those who cry appease, appease, are usually hanged by those they hope to appease. The men of old were brave and bold and bared their necks to axes. But the men today do as they're told and meekly pay their taxes. Well, it's time that the American people took a stand for righteousness. Because, of course, when a nation turns against God, God eventually returns against that nation. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please do not call unless we ask for calls, because right now we have with us from the International Forecaster our good friend Bob Chapman. Hi, Bob. How are you doing?
Well, pretty good. Pretty good.
All right, fine. Things are sort of exciting. We saw that certainly gold had made a tremendous move today, silver. We've seen over this last several weeks very, very strong moves in the precious metals. And what's so unusual about that is ordinarily they go up when the dollar goes down, and when the dollar goes up, they go down. But the dollar and the precious metals seem to be moving together. Why is that?
Well, I think that gold has broken out onto its own path. And if gold is going up when the dollar is going up, what, pray tell, is going to happen when the dollar eventually goes down? I would think that perhaps gold will go up even more strongly. One of the reasons for this is that several weeks ago, the dollar price of gold broke out in terms of the euro, over 350 euros to the dollar, and it's now about 393. That's the first breakout in 17 years, and it was followed by breakouts in a number of currencies, including the Swiss franc. And I think what's happening here is that let me put it in a different sphere. Professional investors are now starting to accumulate gold as a currency, which it is, and it's the only non-fiat currency in the world. And I think people are opting for gold as opposed to a currency, no matter what it may be. And those feelings, as time goes on, will get stronger, particularly if stock markets start to retreat, interest rates start to rise, and in some countries, real estate starts to flatten out or, in some instances, go lower. And so I think this is just the beginning of the recognition that there has to be an alternative to the two largest currencies in the world, which are the U.S. dollar and the euro. And each one has their own set of problems. Europe is in a recession. Anything under 2% growth in GDP is recession, and they're in a recession. But you won't read that in any media anywhere, except perhaps in a newsletter such as the International Forecaster or something like that, because nobody wants to talk about it. And
we'll pick it up. No, go right ahead. You got a little bit more time. So you're basically saying that now Europe is in a depression, and, you know, I think we're going to be in one ourselves here before long. Certainly, the increase in the energy prices, not just simply for gas, but for diesel and for heating oil and for natural gas, you know, this is going to have an impact. People aren't going to have as much money for spending. We see that the federal government now is beginning to tell mortgage companies that they can't do the creative lending that they have, beginning to put restrictions on these nothing down, interest-only loans. And as they begin putting pressure on the housing market, and the houses then began, of course, not selling as well, and the houses began dropping, a tremendous amount of liquid assets are going to begin just disappearing. Well, Bob, just go right ahead and just pick up the thoughts where I left off.
One of the things that's happened yesterday was that the money supply figures came out from Europe, and their M3 figures were up approximately 8%. And that's very unusual for Europe. You usually don't see that.
No, but basically, what, for our listeners, M3, of course, is a gauge of the overall currency, checking all the sort of various monetary increments. And really, Europe has not been pushing the money just readily available as we have they?
No, they have not, but they are now. In fact, over the past 3 months, the monthly average is an increase of 7.9%. And an M1 is up 11.5% in August, and their three-month average is 11.2%. And for Europe, this is outrageous.
Now, of course, M1 being the currency in circulation, I suppose, maybe checking accounts, things like that?
Exactly.
Okay.
And so what's happening is that we're having Europe, which has growth now of less than 2%, trying to get some action going, so to speak. And if they don't get it going, they're going to go into a depression. And at the same time, the European Central Bank won't raise interest rates. And they have a problem because they have two. The basic problem with the European Central Bank is that they only have one interest rate for everybody. And you've got Ireland and Spain, which are booming. Housing prices, unlike the United States, have gone berserk. And in the Central European countries, you have 1.5% growth. Holland, France, Germany, Italy. And so if they raise rates, it's going to be very, very difficult for those countries that are not performing. On the other hand, if they don't raise rates, everything is going to continue to go berserk in the other two countries. So it just doesn't work. You know, and I wrote about this in 1992, but of course, everybody wanted to listen to Hanke and Alan Greenspan, and so now they're in this pickle. And just recently, one of the factions of the ruling group of people in Italy said that, look, you know, a euro has caused us, you know, great trouble and consternation.
Hold that thought there, right there, Bob. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Bob Chapman. And Bob is saying that in Europe they're having all sorts of problems. They do not have very much in the way of growth, of course, and they have very, very low interest rates. So ordinarily you lower the interest rates, you get the growth going. And when you have the euro, why, you know, you have, certainly you're trying to get all these countries to fit into this, and yet some countries, you know, are trying to get, you know, get more industry. Some of them are really failing and going into the recession. And he was commenting that one of the leaders, financial leaders in Italy, had said, and what did the financial leader in Italy say?
Well, he said that this is the Northern Party, it's called, and that's part of the coalition government. And said, look, this is the cause of all our problems, which is really not true. It is problematic for them, but they're a mess anyway. And they said they wanted to go back to the lira.
In other words, they wanted to pull their currency out of the euro.
Exactly, and go back to their own currency, which was the lira. Now, in Germany, a poll was taken several months ago, and over 63% of the people don't want the euro and they want the Deutsche Mark back. And that these things have been preceded by a rejection of the European Constitution by the Netherlands as well as France. And you have a situation where they can't resuscitate the economy. And of course, on the other hand, the neocon idea is for everybody to work longer hours, get paid less, so they can compete. And who are they competing with? They're competing with the Chinese just like we are. And they're overwhelmingly destroying the physical economy of Europe just the way they have the United States.
But I think it's so important for our listeners to understand that there is a master plan. The master plan is to lower living standards in the United States and certainly in Europe. and then to raise living standards in China. And so everybody will sort of be living at a very low living standards, but that is the plan. They do not want people living, you know, at a high living standard as we have here in the United States or traditionally they have in Western Europe. There is a master plan to impoverish the people, but they cannot tell the public that. Now, anybody wants to read the master plan, it's in the Earth Charter. It's up on the Internet. You can pull it down. Point 10, redistribution of wealth within nations, which is socialism, of course, and redistribution of wealth between the nations. And that's what's going on today as we transfer our wealth to the East Asian countries, to India, to China. Our leaders are betraying the American people, and the English leaders and European leaders are betraying the European people, but they can't let the people know the truth. Would that be a fair statement, appraisal, Bob?
Absolutely, and that really capsulizes it. It's extremely important because I just wish more people would think about it. They're all missing the point. They're not listening. I mean, I do many, many programs and publish as well, and they're just not listening. And they just continue to get deeper in debt. And well, they're going to wake up one morning and the housing market's going to start down and jobs are going to become less plentiful. And
their credit cards are going to have to make twice as much on the credit cards, and then of course if they don't make the payment on the credit cards, why they're going to be credit card companies going to take action against them, and you know they're going to be paying more and more for fuel, so they're not going to have less and less to spend, and more and more people are going to get laid off, and their factories are going to move offshore, and we're in real trouble.
You're absolutely right, and it's not only us, it's Western Europe, any of the, you know, formerly industrialized nations. And, you know, as you were saying in the previous program, you know, let's stop and think for a minute. You know, we're letting all of these imports come in from China because they're inexpensive and they keep inflation down, and of course, the middleman and most of their transactions between China and the United States are transnational elitist corporations, so they're raking it in, and the distribution system is making very little. Yeah, the public's getting a good deal, but they're losing all of their production. And on top of all of this, we're becoming dependent to a nation that is still a communist totalitarian society, and they don't care about their people. And yes, they want to be powerful. And I noticed today, I saw something come out of Asia that they are now going to control the internet in China because if you say anything negative about the government, they're going to throw you in jail.
But, you know, what's so incredible about this is no question that China is a totalitarian country, and yet we and our bankers and the World Bank and the Asian Development Fund and all of the various institutions, the Agency for International Development, International Monetary Fund, are doing everything they can to build up the Chinese economy and strengthen this totalitarian government. I mean, our banks are over there buying parts of their banks. You know, our industrialists are going over there and moving their factories over there. We're doing everything to create and finance the best enemy money could buy.
That's right. And it's sort of the world amalgamation. They figure down the road that they'll be able to handle the Chinese and rope them in like everybody else. And they'll be able to absorb them into this world government structure that they so envision for the world, for us. And so they have no compunction dealing with people like this. And, you know, these elitists in New York and Washington and other major cities in the world, these are the same people who, during the 1930s, not only financed communism, but also fascism. And so they just keep the pot boiling all the time, and everybody gets a shaft, and lots of people die, and they could care less.
That is really what's so difficult for the average individual to believe or understand, is that American corporations, American banks, the Federal Reserve System, actually build up the Nazi military, knowing full well there was going to be a war. And we were building up the war material and the war-making facilities, and covered beautifully in Professor Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. But we have so much documentation on that. But you see, the American people cannot understand that what's going on today with China is the same thing that went on with Nazi Germany and Benito Mussolini's Italy. It's like deja vu all over again, building up the enemy, preparation for what I believe it will be a coming war.
I agree completely, and I think that people have to examine things, and of course they're not doing it, but if you take a hard look, you know, they call the current administration in Washington a conservative right-wing group of people called neoconservatives or neocons, when in fact what we have is a corporatist fascist government. And fascism and socialism are two peas in the same pod. One is to command the economy and the other is by regulation. And so the ultimate outcome is not very much different. They are both socialist types of economies. And you can see that with the actions of the current administration. They have been acting more Democrat than the Democrats are. And people are scratching their heads and saying, gee, they're supposed to be conservative right-wing extremists. And here they make the liberals look like small spenders.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, the Democrats, no Democrat president has ever had the deficits as large as our conservative George Bush. I mean, the greatest deficits, both trade and, federal deficit, the greatest deficits of all time.
Well, I think that, if you look at his approval ratings, they range now anywhere between 32 and 40. And I would have to put his ratings around 35 or 36. And all of the chickens are coming home to roost. People are realizing, particularly Republicans, even though they don't want to admit it, that this is not a Republican conservative government. This is a very liberal government.
But of course, trouble is, Bob, that, 2 years from now, when we elect another president, it'll probably be a Democrat, maybe even be Hillary Clinton, because of what George Bush has done, violating all the things he promised, other than the tax cuts. I'm all in favor of tax cuts, but you can't have tax cuts and then increase spending. There's no way that can possibly work, other than perhaps in the imagination of the people in Washington, D.C. If we just cut the taxes enough, why, we'll grow the economy enough so we can pay off all the debts. So we'll just go ahead and spend money as if it's going out of style. And it just doesn't work.
Well, in this week's International Forecaster, which came out on Saturday, I talked about the tax cut and the increase in AMT, which is the alternative minimum tax, instead of the standard deduction, is now going to cost the American taxpayer $750 billion. And the tax cut was supposed to be $1.1 trillion. So that is no longer so. If they're going to have an increase of $750, that means that we have a $350 billion tax cut, not a $1.1 trillion tax cut.
I think it's so interesting that they sold this whole idea of the alternative minimum tax. That's a way to get back at the rich people. That's how we're going to make those rich people who aren't paying any taxes, pay their fair share. It was never designed for the rich people, ladies and gentlemen. It was always designed for the middle class. And within a year or two, most middle class people are going to be paying that. They say one thing, they have another intent. If they told you they really wanted to raise taxes, the people would be furious. But you say, we're going to tax only the very wealthy. And isn't it just so happens, all shucks, with inflation suddenly, more and more of the middle class are going to be paying the alternative minimum tax. So what is it, $750 billion, Bob?
That's right. And anybody making over $72,000 a year is going to stop paying.
We'll be back in just a moment. Isn't it great that we're taxing the rich?
Yep.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and you know, I can remember again and again we're told, oh, you realize that there are some millionaires out there that aren't paying any taxes. We've got to have a new tax bill so we can tax the rich. And then the next thing you know, why there are a lot more millionaires that aren't paying any taxes. So, but of course, our taxes go up in the meantime as well, in the process of getting to those wealthy people. And then, oh, well, there are hundreds of millionaires that aren't paying any taxes. So we got to have a new tax law to get them in. The next thing we know, our own taxes have gone up. When do you think the American people are ever going to realize that it's all a game, it's all a perception, but the real purpose is to impoverish the American people?
Well, I don't know what's going to wake them up. You and I certainly try, but you know, I have to admit that I'm seeing less interest in what we're talking about rather than more. And it's not only in taxes and how government is run and what the real outcome will be for the things that are being done in Washington, but even in the gold and silver realm. The hard currency, the hard money realm, people are buying in Asia, India, China, the Middle East. Physical offtake of gold and silver is tremendous, and nothing ever before like this. And the United States and Canada and Europe, nobody gets it.
Well, I think, of course, the Chinese and the Japanese people don't trust paper currencies. They want something that's tangible. And so, as you say, the Chinese, now that they have money, as their economy is picking up, they're putting their money into gold. So are the Japanese. I understand that the Indians are as well, gold and silver. Is that true?
In absolutely record amounts. You know, there's an interesting thing that's just happened, which is going to affect not gold and silver, directly, but indirectly, and what's going to affect the U.S. current account deficit. That means the money that we owe everybody else more than what they owe us. And that deficit is running around $700 billion a year, about $3 billion a day. And that's having been funded to the tune of about 113% this year by other central banks. And in order to help them and to keep this game going, and I haven't seen this anyplace else except in my own publication, but in Japan, which the Japanese made a deal after the Second World War with the U.S., and the deal was, you take half of what we stole and we'll keep the other half, and we'll play ball, indefinitely with you. And so what Koizumi has done is he is going to, because it's passed the Diet, which is their Congress, he is going to privatize the investments of the postal system, which has $4 trillion in individual savings. And they're going to use that money to fund the U.S. debt.
Well, of course, that is not a very good investment for the Japanese people, but they don't have much to say about how their postal savings are being used, do they?
No, they don't.
But of course,
it just shows you how unconscionable politicians and elitists are everywhere.
But of course, Bob, we're dependent on other countries to finance our debt. And one of these days, they're not going to do it anymore. We'll be back in just a moment with Bob Chapman. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster, and certainly we'll tell you just a little bit later how you can get the International Forecaster, which I think is something I look forward to every week. I read it right along with my World Affairs Brief, and I think Howard Phillips is the other thing I always read, always something worthwhile, things you're not going to get elsewhere. And Bob has simply been saying that in Japan they're going to use trillion yen or $4 trillion that they have in the Japanese postal savings.
Well, it's in yen, but, converting it to dollars is no problem.
No, I mean, but is it $4 trillion?
Pardon? That would strengthen the dollar, and at the same time, they'd take the proceeds and buy U.S. Treasury paper, which would continue to finance the profligacy of the United States government and to the American people.
I think it's important that our listeners understand that America now is totally dependent on other countries to finance our debt. And as Paul Volcker had said in his April 10th article in the Washington Post, you know, how much longer are foreign central banks going to continue financing our debt? Because all you would need was for them to get together and say, we're not going to finance the American debt anymore, and overnight, the whole house of cards would come down. Now, I don't think they're going to let that happen quite yet, but when Paul Volcker is talking like that, you wonder, he's in touch with all of these central bankers throughout the world, why would he let us know that there is a possibility that the game might be coming to an end? As he said, sooner or later, with a bang or a whimper, he didn't know, but sooner or later it was going to happen. Obviously, the central bankers are talking about withdrawing support. Right now, their financing is, we're totally dependent. The mightiest nation in the world is totally dependent on the central banks of the world, Japan, China, Europe, Germany, to buy our debt, to keep us going. How long is it going to keep going, Bob?
Well, I think they can keep that particular phase of what they're doing going as long as they want because the Japanese are going to fund it. And, you know, it's as simple as that. One of the reasons why there's been a big increase in money supply in Europe is that they've been printing money, converting into dollars and buying U.S. treasuries. And so the game is going to continue. None of the central banks are going to quit. And the reason they're not going to quit is if we go down, they all go down, and they know that. So the upshot of the whole thing is you're going to eventually have a stampede out of these fiat currencies into gold. It's already begun. It's been going on since April of 2000. And gold has gone from $252 an ounce to $475 an ounce. Gold will go over $1,000 an ounce, and perhaps much higher. And they can't stop it now because they're almost out of gold because they sold most of their gold. And the gold that they sold at very cheap prices. That's why this gold suppression is so very, very, very good for you listeners out there, because you are buying gold today, or silver, at prices that you really shouldn't be. Gold shouldn't be $475, it should be $1,075. And so you're really stealing it for all intents and purposes, if you want to put it that way. And gold and silver are still a phenomenal, phenomenal buy.
Well, of course, my concern, Bob, is that these internationalists would really like, of course, to take us into a situation where we would be totally under their control. I think down the line they'd like to take us into a cashless society where everything would be mediated through their computers and everything we did would be, of course, under their control. But buying and selling, you would neither buy nor sell unless you had your card with the mark or the number or whatever on it. Do you think that they have that in the back of their mind as the backup position when they pull the plug?
I'm positive they do. And they've had it there for a long, long time. Each day, they continue to take another freedom away from us. We now have, within 10 months, we must have a new federal driver's license. Now, there's a new bill that was submitted today. And in that bill, they want to have a new Social Security card. The ends of that and the reason for it are positive, but that's not the point. They want to use RFID chips on us. Then we won't have to carry a credit card. We just put our arm in front of a machine, and we get debited this or credited that, and everything is held in a federal banking situation. All of our income would go in there, and they keep track of everything, what you do, what you buy. And if you disagree with government, they just shut off your credit.
And as incredible as it sounds, I think Bob is absolutely right. I mean, there really are wicked and evil people who want total control over your lives. Well, they can always justify it, you know, under one guise fighting Osama bin Laden or something of that sort, but it is all contrived. They're not ever going to tell you what the real objective is, and that is the destruction of freedom in what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening, Bob Chapman of International Forecaster. Bob, what impact is this $200 billion spending that is going on down there in Louisiana and Mississippi and Texas going to have? You know, they've given $250 million to the cruise lines for three luxury ships that are sitting mostly empty out there, anchored off in New Orleans. People aren't in, very few people are on board those ships. I mean, they're giving hundreds of millions of dollars contracts to all of Dick Cheney's friends. Dick Cheney's still getting that deferred salary of $200,000 a year from Halliburton. Now, I don't understand deferred salaries when you're the Vice President of the United States, but maybe I'm just not very smart. You know, it sounds to me like a bribe, but they call it deferred salary. That's all right. But all of these, I mean, they spend it out, put out literally billions of dollars already in these non-bid contracts, you know, and they're talking about $200 billion. What impact is that going to have on our economy?
Well, first of all, I think between the two hurricanes, we're talking 300 to 500 billion. The incompetence and the corruption is colossal. If we thought the corruption was bad via Halliburton and Bechtel and Fluor and these private policing organization of mercenaries in Iraq was bad, this is going to be far, far worse. And what impact will it be? Well, they'll be building and renovation and taking care of people who lost things like their homes, etc. And a lot of other money will be spent as well. I'm skeptical as to how many people are going to go back to New Orleans and how much is going to be rebuilt. And then you're going to see eminent domain there as well. And I think that they'll take some of the crime above water properties and make them into casinos and other things that will enrich the elitists. They're already there with their.
But where are we going to get this $200 to $300 to $400 to $500 billion? We don't have it. We're having to borrow now to keep our ship afloat. You know, if we start spending another at least $200 billion, what impact is that going to have on the stability of our currency?
Well, they live in a make believe world where they don't care how much money they spend, nor do they care how big the deficit is. No, do they care how many Americans and other people get killed in their wars?
Hold that thought. We'll be back just a moment with Bob Chapman. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening has been Bob Chapman. Bob, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get a copy of the International Forecaster or how they can get in touch with you, because I will tell you that Bob Chapman's publication comes in. I get it every Sunday, and of course I pull it down. I try to read it in the next 24 hours. It's, oh, maybe 40, 50 pages of your single space detailed crap. It's just crammed full of all sorts of information you're not going to get elsewhere. So pick up the story there, Bob. How can people reach you and get copies of the International Forecaster?
Well, we have a toll free number they can do that, and that's 800-375-4188, and we'll send them an introductory copy. We do it by email as well as hard copy, so you can do it either way. And we publish every week by email and twice a month in hard copy. And as you say, it's a fairly lengthy, and it's about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. And if you really want to know what's going on out there, we get the information for you.
That's a fascinating source of information. So we certainly enjoy reading it on a regular basis. Well, yeah, we were just simply talking about the fact that they're spending money. Now, we're talking, the government was happy to announce it because, of course, many of the corporations have been allowed to bring money back into the country. Instead of paying 30% tax, they only had to pay 5%. They made so much money overseas. They brought it home. They paid the 5% tax. And the tax receipts have really been up this year, mainly because a lot of people sold a lot of things last year. And so the tax receipts have been up. So the deficit this year was only going to be about $333 billion. Of course, they were going to have to add to that with all the money they're going to steal from Social Security and Medicare. I would bring it up to about $500 million, but they never talk about that. But now we're talking about an additional $200 billion at least for Katrina, and Bob says it'll maybe a lot more than that. We're talking about the biggest deficit in history, aren't we?
We certainly are. And they just don't care. And they are in there to loot as much money as they can get their hands on for themselves and their friends. And it is extremely disturbing. And I think most Americans are not happy about it. But they just shrug their shoulders and go through the motions and hope that the game keeps going so that we don't have a recession, a depression, and they can continue to live happily on. And, of course, somewhere along the way there's going to be a problem, something that we don't know about right now, something that we can't plan on. Some event's going to happen, and it's going to turn everything upside down. And historically, it happens over and over and over again, because these people, since the 13th century, have attempted to do this over and over and over again, and that is institute world government, and in one form or another. And they've, every time they've been unsuccessful. And I could give you many instances, but this is just nothing new for those who read history and understand what these people are doing.
Well, because it even goes really back before that. Certainly we know that Alexander the Great, who was a student of the mystery religions, wanted to rule the world. And, of course, they weren't doing it financially. Probably Bob is referring, when he talks about the 13th century, he's talking to the Templars, who were the central bankers of the world, who were part and parcel of this whole world occult movement, the disciples of this the mystery religions, and of course they're still there today. The mysteries still exist in one form or another. The disciples of the secret societies are there working within central banking and the Council on Foreign Relations and the Club of Rome and the OTO and the Skull and Bones and the Rosicrucians, and they're out there, aren't they, Bob?
They're all there doing the same thing, and they've been doing it for centuries. And
right.
Many of the same families are involved, and of course there's always, quote, new blood, so to speak, that enters into it, because who's ever bright and is willing to go along with their program, they want among them. And that's why they have systems like the Rosicrucian system and the Skull and Bones and things like that as a recruiting mechanism. And but they're not going to give up. And the public just does not seem to care.
Well, I think that there are more and more people out there know something seriously wrong. And I think, Bob, the best thing that may happen is we go into a recession. And I don't think there's much question that we're on the verge of a recession. Even the $200 billion that they're talking about spending now is not going to solve our problem, at least not on the long run. And we've got all the people now who don't have jobs because their jobs have moved overseas, and they keep getting trained for new jobs that are being moved overseas. So, as more and more people do not have the money because of the increasing price of energy, I think the economies are going to begin to contract. And the feeling I have reading what Alan Greenspan says is that he's really telling us in his sort of veiled green-speak way that the economy is about to contract. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's already begun, and I think it's going to be perhaps more slowly than what I had anticipated earlier. It'll take about a year for the real estate market to flatten out. They'll probably raise interest rates once, maybe twice before the end of the year. But at least once, and they're trying to cool off that real estate market, supposedly, while at the same time they're increasing M3 and credit to the banking system by an average of 12% a year, which is phenomenal. That's even higher than what's going on in Europe and just going on for years here. And so they're not really slowing anything down. They get the pot boiling. We're going to have hyperinflation. And so they... Greenspan knows that. He knows what he's up to and what he's doing. It's just that in the general media, nobody's going to tell you that, because if they do, they lose their job.
Well, I think what it's so interesting is that it doesn't matter what happens to the news, the market always stays in that real sort of narrow area of fluctuation. That's all manipulation, isn't it? The plunge protection team operating with the full support of the Fed and the banking industry, manipulating the stock market and violating all of our laws. But, of course, they have an executive order that says they can do it, so they just manipulate the stock market, don't they?
That's right. That executive order was made for emergencies, and as far as they're concerned, every day is an emergency, and that's 24 hours a day. But they're not going to be able to keep the market up forever, and they're not going to be able to do the things that they want to do indefinitely, just like they can't control gold indefinitely because they're running out of gold. And so if this thing's all coming together, you might call it like a perfect storm, where you have several different negative things happening simultaneously. But it's going to happen. And it's going to happen over the next few years. And I don't know what the event will be, but it'll come. And everything will get tipped over. In the meantime, gold's going to continue to go up. The markets are going to continue to deteriorate. And there's nothing they can do about that. And we are going to have some ferocious inflation.
All right, fine. Well, of course, this is what always happens when you have irresponsible monetary policy and you don't have an anchor. I mean, traditionally, we've always had the anchor of gold or something tangible to keep the irresponsible politicians from printing more money. I mean, this has been tried literally hundreds of times through the ages. It's never worked. It will not work here. It was tried, and we've used this quotation many times, but it is still so valid because Aristotle witnessed what a fiat money system did, an artificial money system did in ancient Greece, and he said, there's absolutely nothing wrong with fiat money, as long as you have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings. There's nothing wrong with fiat money system, as long as you have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings. And does anybody think there's godlike wisdom in the White House today?
I don't think we've had that on Earth since the departure of Jesus Christ.
And I think that when Aristotle wrote that, he did it with tongue in cheek, because he realized that we will never have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings. That's why fiat money systems have always failed down through the ages. And the greatest deception of all time is to convince people of the value of paper money. That's how you eventually impoverish them. And there's so many good people in America today who have no idea what's going on. And really, they believe that they got all this money in the bank, and boy, they're just sort of waiting for the interest rates to go up so they're going to make out like kings. Well, Bob, what should people be doing now to protect themselves? If you were just an investor out there, and I'm going to open up the lines if people would like to call and ask you, because, you know, I think you've been at this even longer than I have, which is an awful long time. So if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Bob Chapman, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But, Bob, what should people be doing now to protect themselves?
Well, everything's pretty simple now. You get out of debt, get rid of your credit card debt, and of course the minimum payments are going to double on the 17th of October. And you get rid of revolving debt, you try to pay your vehicles off, and the reason why is that there's a good chance that one of you won't be working next year. And if you've done this, at least you will be able to hold on to your home, hopefully. And as far as investments concerned, the only thing I'm recommending is gold and silver-related assets, and that's the end of it.
And, of course, gold and silver-related assets, and how about gold stocks and perhaps uranium stocks? Would that be any place for investment in that?
Well, uranium's in a very unique situation right now, and selective uranium stocks could be included as well as oil and gas stocks. But the impetus should be towards gold and silver coins and gold and silver shares.
All right.
And shares are more speculative than the coins are, and I have my own favorites, but if you need any help finding the kind of people that you think you would like to have in those areas, I can recommend people to you that I don't have any financial interest with.
All right. What about gold commemorative coins? Are they a good investment, or would you be better off simply with the just regular simple gold coins put out by the U.S. Mint that are not too far above gold value, the gold price of gold?
I think it all boils down to the markup, and you know, are they being marked up 4 or 5% like the bullion coins are, or are they being marked up more than that? And if the markup's, you know, 5% or less, then it's a pretty good buy. And the same with the bullion coins. I personally prefer numismatic coins. That's where all the big money has been made, just in the American Liberties and St. Gaudens, the 20s, and that's good enough. I mean, you don't have to go far.
Well, now, what about investing in silver coins, just junk silver, or either the 90% silver or the 40% silver?
I prefer the 90% silver bags, and I think they're the least expensive way to do it, and I think that's a good way to do it. There are other things you can do from time to time, Morgan dollars and things like that, but I'm not a coin dealer. As far as stocks are concerned, I used to be a stockbroker. I specialized in gold and silver shares. Anybody that wants a group of stocks of gold and silver that are, I believe, good quality, they can contact me by getting a free copy and then emailing me, and I'll be happy to help them.
Well, now I noticed that some of the silver stocks, like Heckler and some of the others, they were up and now they're down. In fact, most of the silver stocks are really not moving very much.
Well, you know, they go up and down every day. Gold and silver have been all over the place, but generally they've been an uptrend. The silver stock I like the most is Silver Standard, and they're not in production, and it's probably a very good thing that they're not, because most silver mines can't make money at this price of silver. And you know, I know this is another big company that is in production, and they lose money, and I don't understand why they would stay in production if they're going to lose money. But anyway, that's up to the people who run that company and their shareholders.
Well, what about this China? We hear a lot about China's silver, silver mining in China. Is this really a factor?
Well, China uses about 80% of the silver which they mine, and heretofore they were big sellers. Now, I think they're realizing that they should have more on hand, although they will be producing more in the future, but they'll be using more, too. So I think China is not going to be a seller in the future, and I think that they will hold an inventory, that extra 20% that they're producing. And I think in time, they'll become an importer of silver. As far as mining in China is concerned, it's a communist country. I will not buy anything there.
I think that's a good investment, but I wanted you to confirm my thought on
that. That's my own personal opinion. I've been in this game for 46 years. I will not buy anything in Russia and most of the former Soviet republics because there is no rules. I mean, it's whatever they are that the government makes them this week, you know. So there's no safety in your investment. So I steer away from that theater as well. And here in the last 10 years, things have been pretty dicey in Southern Africa, South Africa and Zimbabwe in particular. And I stay away from those venues because they both have Marxist governments as well. And there's plenty of other places to go to, you know, to do mining, and you don't have to go to those places. And I feel safer being in other locales.
Well, certainly the price of copper and the other commodities has really been roaring up. Do you think that they're going to continue increasing rapidly?
Yes, I think they will for a while. And as soon as the world economy turns down, which I think is going to happen, it's beginning now, and I think it's going to be very noticeable by next June. And I think the world economy as a whole will start to slow down. And when that happens, things such as copper, lead, zinc, and molybdenum, and nickel, and you know, other base metals, they'll start to slip. And as time goes on, they'll slip more and more. But it's been a great run. This year alone, the CRB index is up 39%.
Now that's commodity board, the commodity.
Yes, and the Goldman Sachs commodity index is up 40%. And so that's pretty good. People have made an awful lot of money in the commodity market. And, of course, you have oil and gas. I recommended gas at 580 to 620 in MCF. Mm-hmm. It traded at 1475 today.
Right.
And so all of those speculators who went in and on my recommendation have done very, very well.
Well, of course, it's a totally manipulated market. What they did was they insisted that all new electric generating plants be natural gas users. They used up the natural gas supply. They won't let them develop it in this country. And so suddenly we have shortages. And, of course, what's going to happen, not only the price of electricity is going up, but the price of natural gas that is used in so many homes and so many furnaces, so many stoves is going to go up. And this is simply going to be used to impoverish our people. We'll be right back here to wrap up tonight's program here with Bob Chapin from the International Forecaster. Well, Bob, let's go ahead and get your telephone number, your address out one more time.
Sure. The toll-free number is 800-375-4188. 800-375-4188. And you can get a complimentary copy, whether it's by email or by hard copy, we'd be happy to send it out to you.
All right, fine. Well, you know, this is an exciting time. I really believe that, you know, you're absolutely right that gold is beginning to make a move. I think that it will go up. I think that certainly silver is way underpriced, isn't it?
Oh, certainly is. And I noticed that one-third of the inventory of silver has been put up for delivery, and I think the Chinese are the deliverer. I think AIG is the seller, and it's a deal that probably was made a long time ago. And you know, there's a shortfall each year of production to usage, and I think we're finally coming down to the final stretch on what's left in silver. And once everybody finds out that we don't have any left in inventory or very little, then what is going to happen is silver is going to be $20 and $40 and $50 again, and it will happen.
Well, it's really going to be a difficult time, certainly. I really believe, of course, as the value of precious metals goes up, I think it will probably parallel pretty well the decline in our economy. And, of course, perhaps even as if we do go into hyperinflation, that will mean that everything that the people are buying will be more and more expensive. And this is what always happens eventually when you have a fiat money system. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. And, you know, each generation, unless they've experienced it, you know, they won't know it until it happens. And we had hyperinflation in the late 1970s. But that's over 25 years ago. And so that means that people up to 35 years, 40 years old don't know about that. And, you know, if you go back as far as we do, I mean, we know all, everything that happened during the Depression, but very few people do today because they're all dead.
Well, let's hope we're going to be around to advise them. At least I hope you're around to advise them, and I'd like to be there with you. Bob Chapin, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure to have you here as a guest on Radio Liberty. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners?
Get out of debt and get yourself some gold and silver-related assets, because if you do, you'll be able to keep your assets together, and you might make one heck of a lot of money.
And, of course, remember, it's a spiritual battle. Put your faith in the Lord as well. He's going to see us through. God bless. Thanks so much, Bob.
All right. Good night. Bye-bye.
Well, Dr. Stan here, that was Bob Chapin. We always enjoy getting Bob's take on things, and certainly I believe we're in for some very real, serious economic problems. I think the shortage of oil and the shortage of diesel and the shortage of natural gas is going to have a profound impact on our society. And this is, at least in part, a man-made situation. They've effectively blocked our drilling for oil. They've effectively dropped blocked our drilling for natural gas here in this country and up in Alaska, where there are more than adequate supplies. And those of you who are interested in getting the truth about what's really going on from the energy point of view will certainly want to get the October newsletter, and that'll be coming out here before long. That'll be available, I should say the September newsletter, and that will be coming out very, very soon. Well, this is the time when I want to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We do have some people who do help us, but ordinarily we depend on our listeners to help us so that we can reach out across America 5 hours every day. If you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. I would simply point out that we are having our annual conference here in the Monterey Bay area. The Radio Liberty Conference is going to be on the 19th of November. It's going to be at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, and we do hope that many of you will be able to come. That's the annual Radio Liberty Seminar. We're bringing in several excellent speakers. D.V. Kidd will be here. Dr. David Hayob will be here about the global vaccine agenda. A fascinating talk, if you've never heard it. And even if you had, you need to get his information, because, of course, the life you save could be either your own or that of a loved one. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will tell others about our program. Now, you can go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and listen to our programs on the Internet, directly or indirectly, 5 hours a day. You can listen to our archive programs there. If you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, and if you really want to understand who runs the world, who controls the markets of the world, who controls the governments of the world, who controls the banking of the world, you will want to get my newsletter, The Occult Hierarchy, Part 2. And, of course, you can look at it on the Internet. You can pull it down. It was the June 2005 newsletter. That's The Occult Hierarchy, Part 2, a June 2005 newsletter. But if you don't have access to the Internet, give us a call at 1-800-5-448-927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to send you a free copy. Just ask for the Occult Hierarchy Part 2 newsletter. And then we want you to read it. We want you to study it. We want you to challenge it. We want you to say, could this really be true? Is there a spiritual dimension to everything that's taking place today? If there is, of course, then we hope that many of you, if you do not have a personal relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ, will give us serious consideration to determine whether his claims that are made are really true. And if you haven't read the book of John recently, certainly I could talk to you all evening about Christianity, but read the book of John. Look at the claims that are made there, and then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.